You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A college education can cost nearly as much as a Ferrari these days, so when parents send their kids off to a university, they might assume they'll be encouraged by caring professors to stop by their offices for extra help, to have instructors who'd prefer teaching them than to doing personal research. In her latest book, educational journalist Naomi Schaefer Riley argues that these scenes are becoming increasingly rare, and college students are the worse for it, and maybe dad should just buy that Ferrari. The faculty lounges and other reasons why you won't get the college education you paid for is published by Ivan RD, and I'm very pleased that it brings Ms. Riley back to our show today. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Did a specific incident lead you to write this book?
No, I mean, I've been covering education, higher education, for about a dozen years now, and I also come from a background. My parents are both academics, and now my sister is as well. So I have a lot of contact with higher education, and I was kind of curious about where all this money was going.
Your parents were academics. Were they tenured?
My father was, and my mother never got tenure, actually. It's kind of an interesting story. They both went to the same prominent university, and then, as so often happens with academics, my mother followed my father for his tenure job. And then when she got to their new city, she bounced around to a number of different colleges, had some odd colleagues, and found herself without tenure.
Would she have said that was because she was a woman or just because of the nature of the academic snake pit?
I would say at least one of the times that she did not get a permanent position, it was definitely being a woman had something to do with it. And certainly if you look at kind of the academic totem pole, women are often the least likely to be the senior tenured professors, and minorities are actually more likely to be on the bottom of that ladder, too.
Well, hasn't there been something of an all-out attack on tenure recently, especially on the pre-college level?
On the pre-college level, I think there's even less justification for it, because what you have is sort of this, you know, 2 years in a lot of localities, an automatic tenure. And I think, you know, tenure, the original justification was to protect academic freedom. And I think maybe people are starting to wonder sort of why fourth grade teachers needed an expansive sort of academic freedom. But at the higher education level, I think there's been a kind of circling of the wagons. And I don't think that the attack on tenure there has been quite as widespread.
Well, that's because academic freedom is a bigger issue there, and there have been any number of professors who have said things that were unpopular, and people call for their firing, but this does protect them in the same way as it protected professors during the McCarthy era.
Sure. I think, you know, that there's definitely a sense in which there are probably a number of professors, and my father might count them himself among them, who would have been fired over the years for saying controversial things were it not for tenure. But I think you have to kind of look at the whole landscape. I mean, what is the justification? It's to protect dissent. And I don't think that if you look at higher education as a whole, that most people feel free to dissent. For the first problem, of course, is that, you know, you're on your way to tenure for so long. I mean, you spend a median time to an English PhD now is 11 years. So you spend all this time laboring in graduate school and then laboring as a junior professor. I am not sure, and the research doesn't show this, that by the time you get to the age of 45, that suddenly you're going to start speaking out if you've been trained that whole time to keep your mouth shut if you want job security. The second thing, I mean, I don't think it comes as news to any of your listeners that, you know, universities are very intellectually lopsided in a lot of ways. I think they're intellectually uniform. Certainly, we hear this often from a political perspective. But in terms of other, you know, disciplines as well, I talked to physics professors who would complain to me that even the slightest bit of sort of dissent on string theory, you know, would prompt such outrage from their colleagues that they wouldn't dare to speak out. So I think it's tenure has not lived up to its promise.
Well, different departments have different cliques that tend to control them. So if you to some degree, if you're looking for a job, you might very well go to the one where look in the universities where everybody seems to agree with you in that department.
Sure, to the extent that you have any freedom. I mean, as you know, the academic job market is horrendous right now. I mean, it's very, very hard, particularly in the social sciences and the humanities, to get a foot in the door. Most people are stuck in, you know, what they regularly refer to in the Chronicle of Higher Education as adjuncting hell. So where, you know, you get a few thousand dollars to teach a class, you're teaching on multiple campuses, and you don't, you know, have a lot of time to really devote to the students.
Well, wasn't tenure developed to right a wrong?
originally, you know, tenure came about as a result of a couple of cases that happened in the early part of the 20th century. In part, it was really started to protect research freedom, I think more than necessarily classroom teaching freedom. And I think that that has resulted in a lot of the problems that we have now, which is to say, I think tenure has done an inordinate amount to privilege research over teaching in our universities, even universities that are not specifically research universities.
Well, when a university wants to attract a certain person to a department, usually a prestigious person, they offer them tenure track, don't they?
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, but, you know, in terms of just the perk of it, I mean, I think you have to ask yourself, you know, if you just wanted to attract good people, are there other ways to do it? Now, first of all, as I said, if you look at the bottom of the ladder, there are plenty of people getting PhDs from our best universities who cannot get their foot in the door at a university now. So I don't think attracting people, if you offered them, you know, multi-year renewable contracts, which is what I would be in favor of, I don't think attracting them would be the problem. And obviously, I think if you wanted to really seriously make a dent in the tenure problem, I think you know probably need a few universities to do it at the same time. You know, if everyone in the Big 12 agreed to do it, or you know, a state legislature could vote that at public universities it wouldn't be offered anymore.
Well, there are some schools that don't have tenure, aren't there?
Yes, there are several categories of schools that I found, which was sort of interesting. One was military institutions don't offer tenure. Another one was strongly religious institutions don't offer it, and then actually a few very kind of prominent liberal universities don't offer it. Bennington and Hampshire don't offer it, which I thought was sort of interesting. And I began to think about what these schools had in common. And it seems to me that what they have in common is a strong sense of mission. So these schools, you know, when they interview a professor, they say to them, you know, this is what we are about. If you're Hampshire, you say we are about, you know, being on the cutting edge and we are about liberal values. If you're a religious institution, you say this is what our faith is about. And if you're a military institution, you know, this is what we're about, the military. And so what happens is I think there's a much more transparent bargain going on with the faculty. At other institutions where they're trying to sort of be everything to everyone, you know, a faculty member just thinks, I just get my foot in the door, you know, I keep my head down for long enough, and then I'll have this job security, and that'll be great. But at these other institutions where they don't have tenure, there's a constant process of evaluation that has to go on. Are you sticking to the mission?
My guest is Naomi Schaefer Riley. Her book, The Faculty Lounges and Other Reasons Why You Won't Get the College Education You Paid For, published by Ivan R.D. Well, part of the tenure thing is connected to publication, isn't it? The old publish or perish.
Yes.
Universities?
Yes. The old publisher parish has gotten oh so much worse than it ever was before. I came across one study from 2005 in the Journal of Higher Education that showed that for every additional hour a professor spends in the classroom, he or she will get paid less. And that is true at all levels of university, at liberal arts colleges, at research universities, at state universities, and even at community colleges. And to me, this is sort of shocking, and this gets to the kind of the heart of the question of what you're paying for. I think most parents and taxpayers and students think that they are paying for a good undergraduate education. And I think a lot of professors realize that the incentives for them are always to publish, to be saying something new.
But if you are a university who's trying to attract the best students, you want to have the most famous teachers. And those are the people who publish, who make a dent in their fields. If you are an art school, you want to have the leading artists of your day. If you're a school that is emphasizing physics, you want to have a couple of Nobel Prize winners.
I think that makes sense, you know, sort of on the surface. But the bottom line is for most undergraduates, they're not going to have even much contact with those people. So, I mean, higher education is certainly turned into a game of prestige. And if you want to move up the U.S. News and World Report ranking, it is true. You want to have your faculty publish a lot because that is the only thing that U.S. News can really measure. U.S. News has a hard time coming up with a good measure for teaching. But as parents and students, I think we need to look a little bit deeper into this question and not just say who has the big name professors and assume that that will get you the best undergraduate education.
You're right. Quote, there is more publication than ever, but the subjects of academic books and journal articles are narrower than before, often more trivial and always filled with jargon. But that's just one person's opinion, isn't it?
It's well, certainly not the amount of publication is not one person's opinion. If you compared what is the amount of work that is being published now to what was being published 50 years ago, I mean, it is several times greater. And if you ask an academic press, you know, what your circulation is of the typical academic book, they will explain to you that it's several times smaller. So they're writing for a smaller audience. But even, you know, Louis Menon had a piece recently where he was talking about the length of time to get to a PhD. And he speculated that one of the reasons it took so long was that people were trying so desperately to come up with some kind of tiny, minute new thing to say. And I wonder if this is the best way to be training our academics.
Well, is that any different than in the past? I remember many, many years ago meeting people who were going to Europe on Fulbrights, and their subjects were so obscure. That was even then, because they said if you're going to talk about something that everybody else talks about, well, they're not going to give you the Fulbright. You got to find somebody or some subject that has not been done much in the past, and that usually means esoteric,
right?
Arcane.
Well, as I said, I think it has gotten several times worse just in terms of the quantity of the publication. But I think
there's so many more publications since. I'm
sure.
Talking about 30 years ago.
No, right, absolutely. I mean, so many more subjects are drying up by the minute. You better get on this. But I think the other problem is that the humanities and the social sciences seem to have given up to the hard sciences a little bit. The hard sciences, there was always a justification for saying something new or finding something new because we want to be developing new drugs and coming up with new space-age technology and all sorts of things like that. But the social sciences and the humanities, there used to be a sense like we can defend ourselves on our own terms. We can say, you know, we are teaching the wisdom of the ages here, and there is something to be said for that, even if you don't come up with some new theory of who wrote Shakespeare's plays.
But then we get into the whole other debate as to what the canon should be, and this has become very politicized, hasn't it?
I think in part it has, but even if you believe in, you know, the usefulness of the canon, there are plenty of traditional conservative professors who also realize that the key to a PhD is finding something new to say about, you know, Montesquieu. I mean, it's not all just kind of, you know, finding a new race writer or a new gender writer. I mean, it is also about finding, you know, there were 100 new academic books published last year on Shakespeare. I think Shakespeare is wonderful. I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say I studied him in college, but I do wonder whether that is the best use of our professor's time when so many young people are in need of being introduced to him for the first time.
My guest is Naomi Schaefer Riley. Her book, The Faculty Lounges and Other Reasons Why You Won't Get the College Education You Paid For. It is published by Ivan R.D. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. We're back with Naomi Schaefer Riley. Her book, The Faculty Lounges and Other Reasons Why You Won't Get the College Education You Paid For. It is published by Ivan R.D. And a listener writes, what do you think about – do you think that adjunct professors pose the same problem as tenured faculty?
Well, one of the reasons that we have so many adjunct professors, I think, is because of tenure. You know, there was a documentary a few years ago. They interviewed the head of an economics department at one of the Cal State campuses, and he said he had 40 adjuncts working for his department. And he said, and this was a direct quote, "Sometimes my tenured faculty are simply not available to me." I don't know how that works when your workers are not available to you. But I think for me, the adjunct faculty poses a different problem. They are there specifically to teach. But the problem is that in a lot of cases, they're not given the proper resources to do that. They're not paid very well. They'll find out sometimes a week before the semester begins whether they even have a job. They don't have offices. They often don't have office hours. And there are studies that suggest that adjuncts lead to lower graduation rates.
Why is that?
Well, because they don't have the amount of engagement with students. They also don't have much incentive to engage with students. And that's why actually adjuncting also leads to more grade inflation, which seems sort of contradictory to lower graduation rates.
Well, they say also the fact that education is so expensive these days has led to grade inflation. People are saying I'm not getting the grade I'm paying for. But those an awful lot of the people who are teaching these days are working on a per diem basis, aren't they?
Yes.
Which saves the colleges money. So Why is tuition going up if they are actually paying fewer people to work full time?
Well, it's a very complex formula, let me tell you. But I think what's happening is that the tenured professors are getting away with not teaching very many students, and so they're hiring the adjuncts to fill in for them in order to make up their bottom line. Now, why college costs so much is a very complicated question, and it's obviously in part, if you look at the amount of administration, certainly administrative bloat, as they call it, is one reason for it. Another reason for it is obviously expensive facilities and what they call the arms race among colleges. But colleges have a very sort of complex accounting system. And when they tell the federal government that they're spending X percentage on instruction, all that means is they're spending X percentage on professors. So as one person said to me, she's the head of something called the Delta Cost Project. She said, you could be paying faculty to make sure birds don't fly in your window. And we wouldn't understand that from the numbers that colleges report. A lot of what you are paying for, though, is research.
Matt in Brooklyn left a comment on our show page asking, in practice these days, how portable is tenure? Do tenured professors often move to new universities and receive tenure at their new institution, or do they feel locked into the tenured position for fear of not getting tenure at a new place?
Almost all the time they feel locked in. I mean, if you get tenure, you know, out of graduate school at the, you know, sort of a rural college, the middle of nowhere, it may not have great students, but you get tenure, you're going to be thrilled to find a tenure position these days. And so you will stay. And it leads to a problem with the academic job market. I mean, people not only don't move around, they certainly don't ever retire either. I mean, you saw this a lot with the, you know, the recent dip in the stock market. A lot of professors reported that, you know, they were waiting for their 401ks to get back to where they were before they would be willing to leave.
A listener from Illinois left a comment on our show page saying, tenure didn't save Ward Churchill. If you say anything against the establishment, kiss your career goodbye.
Well, on the contrary, Ward Churchill's case is actually going to be heard by the Colorado Supreme Court soon. So the University of Colorado has still not actually succeeded in getting rid of Ward Churchill, despite—and by the way, I mean, I know people will dispute this, but, I mean, Ward Churchill was really brought up on charges of, you know, bad academic performance, of plagiarism, and all sorts of other problems with his work. It wasn't simply because of his obnoxious comments about the victims of 9/11.
You're right that, I'm quoting, because in our era people change jobs an average of 10 times between 18 and 38, because our unemployment rate hovers around 10%, tenure is outrageous. Now, are you saying that because some professions have it pretty rough, college professors have to as well?
No, I think...
Should everyone have job insecurity in America today?
I'll promote equality on those grounds. You know, I think that what's happened is that tenure has a harder time justifying itself now than it did 50 years ago when people didn't change jobs very often. It didn't seem as outrageous to the rest of the public that you had this job security. And by the way, you know, most people do have some sense of job security. I mean, you and I do our jobs on a regular basis. We hope we do them reasonably well. And we expect that tomorrow we're going to go in and have a job.
But now, my boss can get rid of me anytime she wants.
No, and people do get fired, and it happens. And it's unfortunate in some cases that it happens. But the bottom line is we don't spend every waking minute worrying about job security. And you would be amazed at the extent to which faculty are so obsessed with this idea of job security.
What about your parents? You say your father was tenured. Wasn't it a good thing that he had job security?
Look, I'm happy that he had job security. I joke that the book could be called Confessions of an Ungrateful Child. No, I think that it's a good thing that he did, but I guess my bottom line is I'm willing to throw a few people under the bus because I think the system is very broken. And from my perspective, I mean, I'm politically on the conservative end of things, and I realize that there are conservative professors who've gotten a foothold at some universities in America, very few of them, and they might be the ones under the bus if we got rid of tenure tomorrow. But I do think it would promote a lot more movement in the job market. I think more younger people would be able to get in. You'd hear newer voices. And it would, I think, improve overall undergraduate education.
Well, it is. It depends on which university you're going to. I remember when I was at Brooklyn College and the philosophy department was pretty much controlled by admirers of Ayn Rand. Then you could go to another school and there would be people who are Kantians or people who were Marxists or whatever. And that applies to almost every area. We've been talking a long time about the fact that that academic institutions are filled with backbiting and are somewhat like snake pits where there are, you know, where people all are fighting with each other all the time. So how is this any different?
Well, I mean, I don't think that, the new problem is certainly not that academics are obnoxious to each other. I mean, from my perspective, I guess I really think that it is time to do a reprioritizing here. And for me, the priority is the teaching that goes on in the classroom. I think tenure is a system that is a kind of static system. It says, congratulations, you published this article, you published this book, here is your reward, it is job security. But for me, teaching is a dynamic profession. You cannot rest on your laurels. Any good teacher will tell you that. They will tell you, you may have taught a good class 5 years ago, but that doesn't do anything for the kids who are in front of you right now. And so that is why I think we need a different system if we want to reward good teaching, and a system that allows for consistent evaluation.
Is it the same in all different, you mentioned some schools that are exempt, but would Ivy League schools have similar attitudes to state institutions?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, there's a joke at Ivy League schools that if you get the teaching award, you'll never get tenure. And I think that at a lot of state universities, that's true, too. I mean, you know, I looked a lot at the Cal State system, which is one of our largest public university institutions. And Cal State, as opposed to the University of California, is supposed to be a teaching university. It is not supposed to be a research university. If you go to their website, you will find page after page after page of their faculty and staff publication. Meanwhile, half of the students who entered Cal State last year needed remedial education. So there is such a gap between what the professors want to be doing with their time, apparently, and what the students are really in need of.
My guest is Naomi Schaefer Riley. Her book, The Faculty Lounges and Other Reasons Why You Won't Get the College Education You Paid For. It's published by Ivan R.D. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. About a month ago or so, I spoke with Frank Moss from the MIT Media Lab, who sees no problem with top-tier research universities pairing with corporations. Each get a lot out of the partnership, he says. Do you agree?
You know, I think there needs to be a level of transparency. I mean, we have certainly seen problems in the last few years with the corporate partnerships. And one of the problems I think you see is that there has been a different definition of academic freedom under, you know, some of these corporations reach agreements with universities and then they have proprietary rules about where the data can be sent and that sort of thing. So my attitude is if you want to do that, you know, first of all, you need to be very upfront about what these agreements are. But second of all, if professors kind of want to, and I hesitate to use this phrase, but sell out in this sense, I am not as concerned with protecting their academic freedom using tenure as other people might be.
But there are also other kinds of pressures. For example, in stem cell research, universities had to worry about the government cutting off all funding if they mixed labs with stem cell research and non-stem cell research that was against government rules. We have corporations who obviously are influencing the institutions that they fund.
Sure. A government influences institutions and corporations do and foundations do as well. I don't think that there's any, you know, quote unquote, pure money out there that will, you know, allow these institutions to do whatever kind of research they want. Unfortunately, the attitude of the universities is that only public money is pure money. So, you know, for instance, there's a group called the American Association of Universities, and it's a kind of a very clubby group that every research institution wants to be on this list of American Association of Universities. And the only way to get on that list is to get a lot of federal research dollars. So if you get private dollars, if you get a drug company that wants to work with you, if you get other kinds of private money coming in, that won't count. That won't help. So at a time when we are trying to figure out, you know, how we can tighten our belts a little bit as parents, as students, and as taxpayers, the universities are saying, oh, the only possible prestige comes from taking tax dollars. And I think that's a problem.
Well, where does a college role as an educational institution end, and where does its role as a business begin?
Well, that is a difficult question. I mean, if you wanted to separate some of the research and the teaching, I think you could do that in a variety of ways. I mean, we have think tanks across the political spectrum now that just engage in research. And we could say to colleges, look, if you really don't want to be in the teaching business, you should be in the think tank business. But as far as the college's bottom line, I mean, it is very hard in some cases to even justify the nonprofit status of most universities, because obviously, you know, even if they're not kind of making a profit at the end of the day, administrators get highly paid, you know, all of these, the football teams. I mean, each of these is a complex corporation.
A caller asks, don't adjunct professors sometimes engage with students more than tenured professors because they have fewer responsibilities and don't have to sit on committees and other time-consuming things?
Well, in some, there are certainly some cases where that's true. But adjunct professors mostly have ambitions to become full professors or tenure-track professors. If they want to be on that track, then they have to be doing their own research, in addition, by the way, to making ends meet by teaching on multiple campuses.
But it doesn't really guarantee that you're going to be tenured or even tenure-track if you do a lot of research. What really determines? Is it just whether one person gets it and the other person doesn't? Is this just unique to each individual institution?
Well, certainly research is the best guarantee of doing it. But, you know, it is so idiosyncratic. I mean, there was a piece in the Chronicle of Higher Education the other day by Daniel Dresner, who is a very big blogger, who was trying to reflect on why he didn't get tenure at the University of Chicago 5 years ago. And he, you know, he's a smart guy, and he and his wife both contributed to this piece, and they, for the life of them, could not figure out why he didn't get tenure. And some of his closest colleagues were voting on this. It is such a secretive system as well.
And you can feel betrayed by your friends.
Absolutely.
A caller asked, what difference does it make to the average student that his or her professor is tenured or untenured? How big a difference does the tenure status make on the quality of teaching?
Well, like I said, I mean, I think that the senior tenured, it's not like there aren't senior tenured professors who are good teachers. There are sometimes. But I think the tenured professors often kind of get to decide how they want to spend their time. They often only want to teach upper level small classes, and that's a choice that a lot of universities allow them to make. They often actually get to decide when to teach their classes. So a lot of students complain now that it's hard to graduate in 4 years. And one of the reasons for that, we've learned, is that a lot of professors like to have classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11:30 to 1.
I remember with great fondness a professor I had in art history who announced at the beginning of the term, I don't publish. So anything that you do in this class will not be plagiarized. I will not ask you to do my work for me. He was tenured, by the way, but we all felt a lot of relief.
I'm sure. I mean, I think my father tells a story of a professor at his at Cornell who actually tried to use my father's senior thesis, course in a way to get him to help the professor do publication. And he found the article, you know, a few weeks later, and he realized what had been going on this whole time. So I think that kind of betrayal has been going on for a long time. And I really would prefer if professors were rewarded for the teaching that goes on in the classroom.
Noah from New York writes, many would argue that the main function is for the development of new knowledge, knowledge for knowledge's sake. When you keep that in mind, tenure makes a lot more sense than if you just evaluate it against teaching.
But I think you have to look at our whole higher education landscape. So many more people are going to college now, which I personally don't think is necessarily a problem on its face. But I think then you have to look at the population that you're trying to educate. And you have to ask yourself, some of these kids are not even really have gotten a decent high school education. So if you're worried about the frontiers of new knowledge when you have these students facing you, I think your priorities might be a little misplaced.
What role does our government's academic policy decisions have in this debate about tenure?
You mean as far as the public universities go? Well, you know, I mean, the public universities, in addition to tenure, also have widespread unionization. In fact, that's one of the fastest growing organizing movements in the country is on higher education campuses. So certainly the job security that is offered by public universities is very great. And you don't see a big distinction, though, between public and private universities as far as awarding tenure, though.
But doesn't unionization actually work to protect people who are not tenured?
I sympathize in some ways with the desire for adjuncts to unionize. I think we have put them in a position where they do feel exploited. And from the adjuncts that I have talked to, there's every reason for them to feel that way. I personally don't think unionization is ultimately going to be a force for the improvement of education. So I would prefer if we didn't put people in a position where they felt exploited to begin with.
On the public school level, part of the problem is that the alternative is rating teachers, and then nobody can agree on how you rate teachers. Today, many institutions rate teachers on the basis of student evaluations. And of course, that's really not the best way to rate a teacher.
Right. So here's what I've come to.
And marks aren't the best way to rate it, too.
No, I think here's what I've come to learn about student evaluations. From talking to a lot of professors and administrators, students are good at figuring out who the best teachers are on campus and the worst teachers. And everybody else in between, it's kind of a mix. So I think that students do have something to add to the discussion. But I would favor.
But teachers do teach to the ratings in many cases.
Sure. I think that, and that is another problem with adjuncts, which is that they're only evaluated based on student evaluations. Colleagues never come to their classes. Administrators never come to their classes. You need some adult supervision, people who would sit in and genuinely say, is this person communicating the material appropriately? But I would also favor more young alumni evaluations. I think about 3 or 4 years after college is a good time to ask students, who are the most significant professors you had? What are the classes that had the most impact on your career afterwards? And I think you kind of would get over some of the pettiness of the teacher who gave you a C.
Well, I was with a friend who was met on a bus by a former student who said to him, you were one of the best teachers I ever had. You changed my life. And then he said to her, well, then how come my evaluations were so terrible and how come I was denied tenure?
No, I think that, you know, that happens a lot. Look, I think we all kind of have the pettiness in the moment. But I do think that often professors have that conversation with students a few years out.
Now, not everybody can get a book deal. I don't know what your arrangement with Ivan RD is. But how do all these people get published?
Well, academic journals, you know, and academic presses pay next to nothing. It's that the professors have salaries. And at research universities, we're subsidizing those salaries. Like at the State University of New York, for instance, we assume that professors are going to teach a half a teaching load because the rest of their time will spend doing research.
We have very little time, but I want to read this from a listener who says, I am a recently tenured professor. There are small liberal arts colleges that emphasize teaching, and there are large universities that emphasize research. Perhaps students just need to be more aware of which they are attending. Academics are not necessarily going into their fields to be teachers. Teaching is often a way to support your ability to conduct research.
No, I think that that's true. It is possible to find a good education at a lot of different kinds of institutions, but I would encourage people to think hard about the educational experience.
We have practically no time, but would you eliminate tenure altogether?
Yes.
Naomi Schaefer Riley's book is called The Faculty Lounges and Other Reasons Why You Won't Get the College Education You Paid For. It's published by Ivan RD, and I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've just outraged a few of our listeners.
I can only imagine.
To tell you, especially all of those people who have tenure.
I understand.
Doesn't bother you.
Well, you know, you get used to it.
Again, the book is published by Ivan RD.